We're going to start our community workshop tonight. I'm Tammy Rudock, General Manager for the Cambria Community Services District, and we welcome each and every one of you here. This is a workshop format. We're here to educate about the Black and Veatch Long-Term Financial Management Plan for the CCSD, and tonight specifically we're covering the topic of water and wastewater rates and the cost of service methodology that we've worked on for the past 10 months or so. Analyzing what is in store for us in the future. So I'm going to introduce our project manager from Black and Veatch. Her name is Ann Bowie, and she will be making the presentation tonight on their report thus far. And then at the end, obviously, if you guys have questions and whatever Ann's preference is, you know, it's an open session. It's not a formal board meeting. So if anyone has any questions, just stop Ann, and she can answer those questions as she's going along. Thank you.
I generally prefer not to speak with microphones, and I'd like to kind of face my audience when I'm talking about. Thank you very much, Tammy. What we'd like to do here is to share some information on the process that we have been using to look at some adjustments that are needed within the water and wastewater utility, and to, frankly, help the utility come up with a long-term financial management plan and how to best move forward with that. Before I go too far into the background, and you can certainly read it, I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. I've actually been doing this for almost 20 years. I know that my hair color does not attest to that, but, you know, I have a really good dye box. Works very well. So I have been doing this for a number of years. I have been very fortunate with Black and Veatch to have done this across the nation as well as in some of the foreign countries. And communities are different a little bit across the nation as you go through some of their concerns, but from a citizen standpoint, they all have the same types of concerns. And every time we do a study, we try to listen to our community, what are their specific issues and needs, and try to incorporate that within. Public information and sharing of the process is a very, very important part. This affects you, and it's really important that you understand why we are proposing what we propose and what you can do about that. Just some little bit of background about this study. The district raised rates last year, as you know, was about 5.4% on both the water and wastewater side, and frankly, that basically covered the inflationary costs that this district area sees. The last rate increase prior to that was in 2003. That, again, was approximately 5.5% on both water and wastewater. You know, again, that covered inflationary costs. And I'd like to remind everyone that prior to that, it was 10 years before you had any other rate adjustments. So more or less, we're looking at 15 years with some very small adjustments that have occurred our systems out there. Why is that important? Well, if you think of it, your own home, there are certain things that you have to do to upkeep the maintenance of your home. It's the same thing with our water and wastewater systems. If we do not maintain those things, when they break, they will be very costly, and that's something that we want to avoid going forward. So the foundation for this particular plan is that we wanted to take a look at where the district was and help them move forward with a 5-year, 10-year plan to get them into a position where they want it to be and where they need it to be going forward. So as part of that, one of the basic requirements that we look at from a business standpoint is you want to maintain a working capital reserve of approximately 60 days of your O&M expense, O&M standing for operation and maintenance. Think of it in terms of your own checkbook. We don't like to live month to month. And, you know, most financial planners sit here and they say, you know, you need to have 3 months, 6 months of emergency monies out there. Well, that takes a long time to gather. For a business to pay their bills, they need somewhere between 60 days worth of operational capital. Working capital is what we call it. The industry standard out there is between 60 days and 6 months. Okay, so we're looking for the district here about 60 days worth. In addition to that, the district has debt. Over the course of years, in order to, back in 1997, 96, something like that, and then they refunded it in 2006, they did borrow money to do some capital improvement projects. That money needs to be repaid. And no different than the mortgage that you have on your house, there are certain requirements that you have to meet with lenders when you borrow money and you repay it. One of those is contained within debt covenants, and it requires that the district maintain revenues, gross revenues less the O&M expenses, of 1.1 times the debt service that's required to be paid. Okay, so these are conditions that are laid upon the district by the lenders. I'm going to talk very briefly about the build-out reduction program because I think that you are probably all very intimately familiar with it. And I'm going to point out that the cost that we're going to talk about today, the approach that we're talking about today, does not incorporate the build-out reduction program. So those costs are on top of. Okay? So we're looking at something a little separate because it gets very, very complex when you start adding that in together. Finally, as I mentioned before, you have to maintain your assets, okay? We have assets that we put into place, such as your water mains, your sewer mains. They last anywhere between 50 and 100 years, okay? It's kind of hard to tell because they're underground and we don't see them until they break. But that's roughly the time frame that they last. Now, some last longer, some last less because, you know, it depends upon the conditions in which they're operating under. But nonetheless, you have to replace them eventually. Okay, it's like painting your house. You need to do that about every 10 years. Aside from the fact that it can look kind of scuzzy if you don't, you need to do that in order to take care of your home. Well, when we're talking about mains, we are talking about some very expensive pieces of infrastructure. And it's not something that you can just pull out your checkbook and write a check for. As a general rule of thumb, a mile of main to replace can cost approximately $1 million. So this is something which, from a good business planning standpoint, you want to be planning for. I'm not saying you have to put aside $10 a day, but it means that I don't want to be able to come in here and say to you that I want to have a 1,000% increase right now and then go away. That doesn't work. I'm a ratepayer, no different than anybody else. I don't want to see my bills spike that much. So what we want to look for are rates that make sense, that can be phased in over a period of time to minimize the impact to our ratepayers, that provides sufficient cash flow on a yearly basis so that the utility can meet its obligations. That's what we're looking for when we look at some of our typical financial plans. Okay. I'm going to go into an area which, if I see your eyes glaze over, I'll kind of skip through a little faster because it can get very technical in a lot of ways. There's three parts to a cost of service study. The first part, in the terminology of the industry, it's called revenue requirements. This is where we basically establish how much money do we need. Okay, so it looks at things like your capital costs. It looks at things like your O&M costs. It looks at your debt obligations. And then how much money do I need to cover those obligations? That's the first part, okay? The second part is the cost allocation part. This is where we determine, okay, who do we need to collect this money for? In other words, who is causing the demand in our system? Who's causing using the system the most and causing us to have to build it in certain ways? They pose a certain cost upon the system, so we need to look at that because think of it in terms of when everybody wakes up in the morning and takes a shower as a residential user, think of everybody turning on their showers at the same time. As an engineer, when I'm designing a water treatment plant and when I'm designing my mains, that means that I have to design a plant that can provide water to my thousands of citizens who are all going to take their showers at 6 o'clock in the morning and expect to have water at sufficient pressure so you can take a decent shower at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's what I have to design my treatment plant to handle and my pipes. So those are some of the considerations from an engineering standpoint when I look at my systems that I have to take into consideration. The final part of a cost of service study is the rate design. And this is where we take a look and say, how do we price our services? Okay, and that's the last part. Okay, as I mentioned before, we're going to step through each of these parts and kind of go through some of the assumptions that we've made and some of the underlying approaches to what you look at. In the revenue requirements section, okay, what's the purpose, what's the objective, and how do we go about accomplishing this? Bottom line, how much money do we need? What we're trying to do here is to balance how much revenue we have coming in with how much our revenue requirements are or our expenses are. And the idea is to have them in balance. Not one side higher than the other, one side lower than the other, to have them in balance. That is very simply put the concept of revenue requirements and what we want to look at. For the district, they specifically asked us to take a look at developing a multi-year plan. Why is a multi-year plan important? Because from a planning standpoint, when you're looking at doing a number of capital improvements, you want to be able to phase it out over the same plan. The other part of the revenue requirements is that we pick a test year. And what that simply means is that we look at, after we've established the revenue requirements, we pick 1 year in order to derive rates around it. Okay. Okay, as I mentioned before, what are we trying to do here? I mean, that's the purpose, and the objective is adequate funding. The bottom line is still, every year the utility needs to recover enough money in order for it to operate and not go into a deeper deficit position. We want to spread out any revenue adjustments that might be needed over a much longer period of time if we possibly can, because it's frankly easier for everyone's budget. I know I don't like it whenever I get my electric bill and I can't quite figure out why it's gone up, or let alone my cable bill, and that doesn't seem to make any sense to me either. But it's the same sort of thing. I'd like to be able to know what I'm to expect so I can budget for it, so I can plan for it. And again, you know, you're trying to minimize the impact to our rate customers. Okay, here we get into the nitty-gritty of how we actually go about this. What the study does is it takes a look at, the first thing we always come in and ask for is, that's not my car, what have you done historically? Okay, let me take a look at your historic counts, the number of customers you have, how much consumption is used, what's the behavior in the past that has gone on. So we use the history in order to forecast what's going to occur in the future. That's how we establish our revenues. We also take a look at historically what has the utility done in terms of O&M, in terms of their operation and maintenance. Have they been doing proper maintenance? Have they been skimping? What exactly have they been doing? We look at capital, same types of questions. You know, you have what, 23, 25 miles of mains? I ask typical questions, how old are your mains? Okay, 75. Okay, a lot of mains. A lot of miles of mains. I ask typical question, you know, how old are your mains? Do you have reserves set aside so that eventually you can replace them? You know, for older systems, the typical rule of thumb is you want to replace about 1% of those mains a year. Because if you think about it, they last 100 years, you had 100 miles, you're doing 1 mile of main a year. That's not a lot if you think about having to replace it, but that's a lot of money, and you have to plan for that. You're very fortunate here that your mains are fairly newish. They're about 25 years old, about, would you say, 25-ish? Yeah. And that is very, very young in a sort of holistic standpoint when you're looking at it, younger than me. But again, you still have to start preparing a reserve account where eventually you're going to have to replace those mains. And so those are things that you have to consider. And those are the questions that I ask. You know, what are you doing right now to maintain your system? We look at the capital financial, we look at the capital plan. What are the projects that are on the board right now? You know, what has to be done? Have you prioritized them? Have you looked at them? You know, is this a wish list? And is the timing, does the timing make sense? Oftentimes I'll go into utilities and they'll sit here and the engineers will all come running out and they go, oh, great, here's our CIP. And I look at it and I go, okay. And how much do you do right now? And they go, oh, we do about, you know, $10 million a project. And they come back and I go, okay, if you don't do it, I'm going to do it. So they learn. And then one of the most critical elements of the revenue requirements section is we take a look at the cash flow. This is really no different than your checkbook. Money in, money out. It's a little bit more complicated because they have, you know, more bills to pay and different elements, and there are a lot more zeros associated with their numbers. But it's the same basic principle, a checkbook. We're trying to balance the checkbook. And then we determine, am I short money? Because if I'm short money, I have to do something about it. And that's where we take a look at the revenue deficiencies. And yes, we do have to take a look at our balances, our reserves, and whether or not we are satisfying the debt service obligations and the covenants that are required of us from the lenders because we have borrowed money. The other thing about that is if you have borrowed money and you know that you need to go back out on the market to borrow money, you have to be in a certain financial condition in order to do that. Again, I draw the parallel. If you're going to go out and get a mortgage, as you all know, people check that little credit score rating. Well, the better your credit score, the better a rate you're going to get. That is no different with the utility. The better a financial condition and picture that they can present to the market, the better a rate it is. And that is important because when you're talking about borrowing a substantial sum of money, every little point that you can save on an interest rate is savings, is substantial savings on your interest rate. Okay. And we also try and look at various alternatives. And this is generally when we sit down with staff and we go, here's the model. What do you suggest? This is, you know, our first run at it, and this is what we are seeing. And they will generally say, well, you know, we don't like that number. How about if we do this? And we'll run it through the model, and then they will see the impact. Because when you're talking in the abstract, it's very easy to talk about it and talk about, well, maybe if you select this, or we move this out in timing, or we cut back on this. But when you actually run it through the model with hardcore numbers, and you see what it takes in order to generate the revenues that you need, it brings home a different message. Okay. I talked about this already, and I'm going to just go briefly back over it. In the cash flow analyses, there's two sets that we run. One is for capital, because how you finance your capital is a little different than financing your operational needs. On the capital side, you can borrow money. You have connection fee revenues that you can use to pay for your projects. On the operating side, about the only sources of money you have besides some miscellaneous income is rate revenue. Okay, but and so that's why there's two different things. Also, it's on the operational side that we're looking at, are you maintaining a 60-day working capital reserve? That's where the debt covenant coverage test is done, is on your operational side. Okay? So those are the ones that we look at. Okay, capital financing. As I mentioned before, what we're looking at here are your major improvements as well as some routine annual. Now, we're going to go into this a little later, but I will tell you right now that the utility is standard rule of thumb for a utility of about this size is to be spending somewhere between $500,000 to $2 million a year on annual routine capital. Okay, the rule of thumb, sources of funding for capital improvements, as I mentioned before, you have grants. You have developer contributions. You have connection fees. And you have debt financing. You also have something what we call as pay-as-you-go. If you have the money on hand, you know, a lot of utilities like to just pay for it rather than go out and borrow more money and incur more debt, and that is a very valid thing to do. If you have the money, that's a wonderful way to go. Some utilities have money, but because of the size of their programs, we're talking billions of dollars of a CIP, you know, physically that you can't pay for it in cash, so it makes much more sense to go out and leverage and get the debt and pay for it over a much longer period of time. The utility here would love to maintain a pay-as-you-go philosophy, but that requires having money in hand. And right now we have none in the capital funds, essentially. So it means that eventually they're going to get back to a pay-as-you-go type of philosophy, but for right now that's not possible. Okay. Last button. The procedures that we use in sort of arriving at a rate study and doing cost of service, there's a number. On the water side, we're governed by AWWA, which stands for the American Water Works Association. In the United States, that is the governing agency with respect to setting standards for how not just I do my rate studies and cost of service studies, but for how the water operators do certain business practices within the water utility. They are the ones that go out and set the standards for that. On the wastewater side, there's a number of agencies, one of which is WEF, W-E-F, which stands for the Water Environmental Federation. Again, they have manuals that tell you, you know, these are the things that you need to look at. The methodology that is out there is a very standard methodology that we use. It is accepted by public utility commissions, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's similar to what you have on the electric side, where you actually have to go through a whole court case hearing We prepare testimony, we testify, we go through witnesses, we go through depositions. I mean, it's like going to court. It's a very, very formal process. And in addition to that, the methodology we use is defensible, and it has been tested under a number of court cases throughout. So if you talk to other utilities or other communities and other consultants and things like that, the methodologies that we all follow are all very standard, and that is the industry practice. Okay, as I talked about before, cost of service, and this part I might kind of go through a little quick. This is where we determine who causes or who uses the system and in what manner. Okay? And why is that important? Because I can't price my services if I don't know who's causing the burden. Some of the easiest ways to look at it is think of it in terms of like on wastewater. Domestic users basically only flush the toilet and pour some things down the kitchen sink, right? The loading that we place on the system is fairly consistent, okay? Now, think of now going to the restaurant. What does a restaurant put down? Its sinks. Very different things necessarily that you would do in your own kitchen. If I go to a bakery, what do they use? What do they, you know, pour down their sinks? Again, everybody uses the system in a slightly different way, any of you out there. That is not possible. So what you do in the industry is you look at classes, and you say these customers tend to behave in the same way. We tend to use water in the same way. We tend to discharge the same kind of things to our waste streams, the same sort of things. So you group them by similar characteristics, and that's what we're doing here, is we had to identify the customer classes and then see what it is that they do and how their behavior is the same or not. And that's what I just mentioned here. We determine how much money we have to recover from our different classes by different cost-causative factors. And I'm going to go through that because that sounds really nebulous. So does functional cost components. But I'm going to show you examples of those and how people use systems and how the process is allocated. And then we determine what that unit cost is for everybody for one unit. Do I have my pictures yet? Not yet. Okay, I'm going to skip through this because I'm going to get to my pictures. Okay, functional cost components on the water side. The different areas when you look at a water utility and what do they have to provide to their customers, they need source of supply. We need water somewhere, our source of supply, right? Then we got to treat the water. That's water treatment. Then we got to transmit it or distribute it to our customers. That's the T&D component, transmission and distribution. We got to store some of it, but sometimes, because sometimes we're going to pump our water and people are going to use a whole heck of a lot more of it, and they expect that water when they turn on their tap. So we need to be able to have reservoirs to deal with those peak hour demands that are going to occur. And then we have the other end of it, which is the customer billing, collection, the interface that you have. Most of you, the first level of interface with the utility, the meter readers, and et cetera. So those are all cost components. What we then do is we take a look at from an engineering standpoint. The treatment plant, how is it designed? It's designed to handle average day use and max day use. Okay, that's traditionally how your water treatment plant is designed. Okay, peak day. In other words, the hottest day in the year, I go. Everybody's watering their lawns, and we're all running through the sprinklers, all that sort of thing. That creates demand on the system, and it's a peak day. Well, the water treatment plant has to be able to produce that water, so it needs to know what that is. Now, you also have elements called peak hour, and that's when you look at the pipe. And again, it's no different than the example I used in earlier where everybody takes their shower all at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, compound that with, let's say that there's a fire that happens at the same time. You have to have sufficient sizing in your mains and sufficient pressure to be able to deliver the water to the people who need the showers and put out the fire. Okay? That's called peak hour. Okay? Doesn't help if I use peak day to size my mains. I'm not going to have sufficient pressure. Okay? I have been in communities where frankly, and you guys are really lucky this way, I've been in communities where I've looked at their peak hour demands, how they've sized it, I've looked at their fireside requirements on this end, and frankly speaking, they have enough pressure to put out a fire in a garbage can. That's about it. Because they just don't have it. You're happy that it's gone and doesn't back up, but they have to deal with it on the other end. And there are very stringent requirements on the discharge side as to the wastewater treatment systems. I'm going to really simplify this. Rate design is part science and part art. Okay? There's a science to it in terms of we have to take a look at what we're trying to accomplish, which is, again, design a set of rates and a rate structure such that at the end of the day, when I take my rates and I apply to everybody's usage or their discharge, I recover sufficient revenues for the utility so it can pay its bills. That's what it comes down to in terms of the rate design aspect of it. And we try to look at it by class, by size, by a number of different types of variables out there. Some communities don't look at classes. Some communities only look at meter size. Some communities look at seasonal rates. Some of them charge extra if you live up the hill because it costs more money to pump that water up the hill, and they charge by zone. Those are all the different types of formats that you can look at. And that sounds wonderful in theory, but at the end of the day, when we make recommendations, we need to have rates that are practical. Okay? I want you to be able to look at your water bill and your wastewater bill and understand what that means, unlike my electric bill, which has 15 different tiers of usage, and no matter what I do, I'm always in that top tier. I want you to be able to look at your water bill and understand it should be simple. It should be not a complicated thing for you to understand. The other end of it is that it should be easy for the district to be able to bill you. We don't want them going out there and having to go buy a whole brand new system just to bill their customers. That makes no sense. It costs time, it costs money, it costs questions. You want accurate bills. You want to have to sit here and call customer service, and as nice as they might be, you don't want to have to sit here and go, can you explain this to me, and why am I being charged this and this and this, right? I mean, nobody wants that hassle, no matter how nice customer service is on the other end. It doesn't make any sense. And it takes time, it takes money. We want our rates to be understandable, we want them to be fair, and we'd like them to be cost-based, because that makes sense. If you use more water, you pay for that. If you discharge things which are more difficult to remove from a treatment standpoint, there's a cost associated with that as well. And that's what the cost-based approach does. It looks at that. And that's what I just talked about here, and we go through. The art part of it is that there's different ways to actually design rates. It is not a simple, I plug in one number and now a rate spits out. When you're looking at tiered structures and block structures, there's a lot of art that goes with it going through, and it does take time. Okay. Yes. These are all things that I'm going to skip through, even though it's important. These are all things of what makes a rate suitable. You know, is it fair? You know, you try to be fair. I don't know any of you personally. Because if you could conserve all year and then everybody turns on the faucet at the same time, we still have the same problem, is that I still have to be able to supply you that water. So there's two parts to that aspect of it. Yes, and from my standpoint and from Art's standpoint, you need to have legally acceptable and legally defensible rates going through. And that's why we spend a lot of time going through the methodology. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about history as we go through some of the findings that we have seen in our study. Since about 0102, the water, and you're going to see water, and then you're going to see wastewater, has been running in a deficit position. As you can see, the revenues have been less than the expenditures. There's a couple of things that means. That means that as they have depleted their reserves, they've also had to cut back on operations, on capital improvement projects, as I mentioned before. now. I recognize that you did have an increase in 03, about 5.5%, if I recall correctly. You did have an increase last year. And as I said before, that did cover basically inflationary costs. A number of things have happened in that time frame. Aside from basic inflation, which I'm going to go through as well, you're also looking at, you know, we had 9/11, which had several impacts, not just in terms of it's more difficult to get through security at the airport, but also from the water and wastewater side, they've had to do security assessments, vulnerability assessments. They've had to change certain operational requirements. There have been additional state and federal mandates, which I'm also going to go through. And in addition to that, here's wastewater, as you can see, that's still red as well. State and federal mandates. This is just the water side, where we have to have increased operator training, certification, backflow prevention. We have more monitoring requirements out there. All of that costs money. And frankly speaking, they've really occurred in the last few years. They've really stepped up this, part for a whole variety of reasons, aside from the fact that it takes EPA a while to get their act together and pass laws. But these are all requirements that they have to meet, and they are required to. I was going to talk about this, and I'm going to sort of summarize this. We're all very familiar when we read the paper about CPI and its indices, the Consumer Price Index. Okay, we're all impacted by it, whether it might be annually in terms of you might get a cost of living adjustment in your salaries. We know what that is. And then in this particular area, the traditional way of looking at it is they look at the L.A. indices, because they look at L.A. or San Francisco. You know, they don't have one for actually the specific area. And you can see that over the last few years, on a compounded basis, you're looking at a 12.6% increase in the CPI alone. And you and I both know that CPI does not cover things like gas, which I know last week over here was over $4 and now it's below $4. It doesn't cover things like gas. It doesn't cover those elements which we know are very, very volatile. That's one element of the things that have happened. Let's talk about what the ENR index says. ENR stands for Engineering News and Record. It is what the construction industry looks at. Part of this is increased supply. You know, all our concrete flew overseas to China because there was so much demand. That was one thing. Then you also have instances of the hurricane impacts. And Katrina and Rita really wreaked havoc across the nation when it came to the construction side. I had a client in Arizona. Their CIP quadrupled in 1 year. They were very, very unhappy, but they went from a $100 million program for 10 years to $400 million, and they were at a loss as to what to do. You know, there's only so much you can raise rates. It had a tremendous, tremendous impact, and we're seeing it everywhere. But those are the things that we're looking at. Those are the things that have changed in the last few years. So whereas you did have an increase last year, as I said before, it's basically kept you whole for that year. And we still have to catch up with all the past years. Some of the key assumptions when we move forward to do our projections: no growth until the moratorium is lifted. Okay. That was a somewhat inherent basic one that we looked at. We looked at escalations on our O&M costs, our operation and maintenance costs, ranging between 4 to 5%, which is about par with what you're seeing in this area. And then the capital improvement projects, as an escalation factor, we applied a 5% escalation. Again, we didn't use 10 or anything like that, but we maintained that cost. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this, but we will go into it in more detail at the hearing in July. But this is the proposed water CIP plan. Now, not to put the district on the spot, when staff first came to us, it was a five-year plan. And we developed rates. And then they kind of had a heart attack, and the ad hoc committee directed us to go back and revisit that. And so the five-year plan turned into a 10-plus-year plan. So a number of projects were spread out. And district really worked, the staff really worked hard on trying to do that. What you're looking at over the next 5 years is approximately $2 million a year being spent on capital improvement projects. I will say that the 06-07, which is not on this screen, but 07-08 is already reflects pretty much committed projects already. So they're already in the stages of being done or being worked on. Similarly, if you go to wastewater, you have fewer capital projects and the needs are smaller. And frankly speaking, you know, staff is still working on it because you're not going to go from a year for about 300,000 and then drop down to 165 and then go up to 500. You know, they're going to streamline a little bit, and so they're still working on it. The CIP here is not final. It is still being worked on. But you're not spending a significant amount of money compared to water. But it's still necessary. Okay. If we maintain our current rates and we go forward with our projections of revenue based on essentially zero growth until the moratorium is lifted, which we're projecting approximately fiscal year 11-12, then this is the situation that the water side will face. We will have continuing increasing expenses, and after this first year, BAPA will maybe a little more operational needs and meet our debt covenant requirements. Okay, and then long-term, we want to have that long-term financial management plan in place and meet all the other types of traditional business principles that it takes to run a business, because the enterprise funds are businesses. They don't make money, but they are businesses nonetheless, and as such, they have certain requirements in terms of how often you replace things, how often you go out and do debt, how, you know, just normal basic best management practices that need to be put into place. What happens if we do nothing? If we do nothing, the water fund will continue to have a growing deficit, which is illustrated by the blue is the revenue, the yellow is the expenses, and the red is the cash balance. It will continue to have a deficit. You'll have no capital improvements because you have no money. And because you have no money, you have a deficit position, you cannot go to market. Well, let me take that back. You can go to market because you can always find somebody who is willing to lend you money. The question is, how much are you willing to pay for that money, the use of that money? Now, I will also say this. To the extent that the water and the wastewater utilities go out to market and have to maybe be at junk bond status or something because of their financial situation, that reflects not just on the water and wastewater utility. That reflects on the entire district. It makes it more difficult for the entire district to go out to raise money. Okay? So part of our short-term plan is to get you in a position so that you can go to market, you can get money, a loan, a bond, at a reasonable rate. And in addition to that, obviously, if you continue to do this, if we don't do the capital improvements, maintain, you do run the risk of having some potential health and safety issues down the line. Okay, given that, obviously, the staff and district didn't really like that alternative, so we came back with two. Now, I will tell you this. There are many ways of running combinations, and I could sit here and give you 15 of them, but frankly, that's not going to get us anywhere, and so we kind of summarized it down into two, one of which is this one here, which both alternatives, by definition, are going to satisfy our immediate, short-term, and long-term goals. Otherwise, we wouldn't consider them. The first one requires a general loan, a general fund loan of about $178,000 in the next fiscal year. That loan will get the water fund to the position it needs to establish that working capital fund. I'm going to stress that it is a loan, and it is within the plan that we have recommended that there will be payback on that loan at a nominal interest rate. I think I used like 3%, which is about the going rate right now. The revenue adjustments in order to accomplish this over 5 years are, as we've outlined here, 19, 19, 12, 9, and 7. Now, I'm going to stress that the board has not seen this per se. They have not voted on this. These are things that we are initially proposing and forward. We're looking for input to go forward. So these are not set in stone, and we're still working on these things. The other thing I want to also emphasize here is I say this very carefully. These are revenue adjustments. You will pay for that. And that's why I say it's important to differentiate between a rate increase and a revenue adjustment, because that is what we're looking at here. So I can't, you know, when we get to the point where we have a final recommendation coming forward, I can do a typical bill for the typical user. You may or may not be a typical user. I know that when I do typical bills for my community, I am not a typical user. My children use water nonstop, and they change their clothes nonstop. So I know that my personal bill is almost higher than what we use for a typical bill within my community. So I put forth the same caveat to you that when you look at this, you have to be careful. You may see something higher or lower, depending upon your usage. Second alternative we looked at, the ad hoc committee asked us to take a look at what happens if we don't do a spike right away and we look at maybe steady increases over the five-year time frame. In order to do that, we assumed a general fund loan, again, in the next fiscal year of approximately $350,000, which would also be paid back in years 3.5, 4, and 5. And that results in a 15.25% increase for 5 years. Okay? Wastewater. Same sort of situation if we do nothing and we maintain our current rate structure. We will not be able to do any capital improvements. We will continue to have a growing deficit position. And we do run the risk of running into permit violations down the line, because if you're not going to maintain the system, you run that risk. First alternative here. This one also requires a general fund loan, and this loan actually would occur this year, at $321,000, and this would get the enterprise, the sewer enterprise fund, to a zero cash position. Okay, it is projected to run at a deficit this year of approximately $320,000. If you look at, you know, sort of a one-time increase and the smaller increases over that time frame, you're looking at approximately 36% in the next year, followed by essentially 2.5% thereafter. Okay. If we go to something that might be a little bit more palatable in terms of looking at equal increases, this requires two general fund loans. Again, they're loans and they would be paid back of $321,000 for this current year that we're about to end, plus an additional $450,000 in our next fiscal year. Okay? And that then results in a 12.25% increase over the next 5 years. Adjustment is what we're looking at. Okay? Yes, sir. Sure. Yes.
It's our reserve account, Eli.
Right. Right. Now, and utilities do that when they run into situations of shortfall, and it is always it's a good business practice that if you're going to borrow money, that you pay it back. And that's our general recommendation. You know, if you're going in place to pay it back, and that's a really important thing to go forward. Again, you know, it is the district's desire to sit here, staff's desire certainly, that we want to have a sustainable plan. The utilities want to stand on their own 2 feet, and that's what the intent of this plan is meant to do. Okay, any other questions before we wrap up? I thank you for your patience. Nobody fell asleep, which is good. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You're probably going to have to approach the microphone. This meeting is being televised for those at home. Sorry.
First of all, that was an excellent presentation. I really appreciate it. And I am very supportive that we need to do something about our
and
water rates.
If you want to come sit down, you have a microphone right here now. Sorry, I don't mean to keep interrupting. I'm just trying to be right here, Ann, at the microphone so you can respond.
So, and I'm Marjorie Ott, resident and owner of the Lullaberry Inn. And one of the things that we've been hearing is, and I understand you pay more if you use more. That all makes sense to me, fair and equitable. And I do think we do need to do something about our water rates. Very supportive of that. But I've also heard that what is under consideration is a higher base rate for lodgings. And I've got a concern about that because certainly lodgings do use more water, and it's for out-of-town guests. But residents have out-of-town guests. When they have out-of-town guests, would they pay that higher base rate? And also, in this community, the tourist industry is really the economic engine. And we have small businesses, no big chains, no Westons where we can get a pool of money, no Hiltons where we can get a pool of money. These are all small businesses. And it would really put a higher base rate, I think, would put an undue burden on the lodgings. And that will have a ripple effect out into the community, because the less visitors we have coming, the less lodgings that can sustain themselves, then it's going to hurt the business, the whole community. And we can't, it's not a tax, it's not an assessment, so we can't pass it on to our, we can't say water surcharge to our guests, they'll rebel. We all remember the energy surcharges that hotels tried to do in the early 2000s, and it didn't work. So that means either we would have to absorb it as a small business owner or raise our rates. And my concern about raising rates too much is that this county is going to have an increase of about 40% increase in lodgings. So that means it's really important that Cambria remain competitive and that we keep a high occupancy rate in our community. So what I'm saying is I don't mind paying more for water. And if we use more, we should pay more. But I don't think the base rate should be higher for lodgings. Also, in this community, you have a lot of vacation rentals, and how would you handle those? Anyways, that's my concern. But I do appreciate your presentation. It was very good.
Okay, darn, now it's on. Those are the inputs that we're looking for.
Thanks.
And, you know, we're still, as well as SIUs, which are significant industrial users, and there are specific requirements on the wastewater side that if you have a business mm-hmm. that falls within that, they have to have pretreatment and things. We do not have that here.
Okay. Because, you know, being the laundromat, we have tourist customers, we have local customers, mm-hmm. we have the restaurants and the hotels. Everybody uses our facility.
Right.
So we do use a lot of water, but mm-hmm. our waste obviously is not going to be the same as restaurants
exactly,
or
yes.
homes. Mm-hmm. And so I would just like to see if maybe we could be classified differently because our usage mm-hmm. is local and mm-hmm. the visitors. And a lot of times people will come to use the laundromat washing machines to save their water units. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they'll take their wet clothes home and dry them. And so, but we have to be, you know, we're stuck with the big bills.
Right.
So
right.
I would like to ask if something could be done to give us some sort of a consideration.
Okay, we'll take that under advisement.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Anyone else?
Okay, so if anyone's interested in where we go from here, I had mentioned at last month's board meeting that we would be holding the first hearing this month, which, of course, that's not going to occur. This workshop is today. We have Prop 218 requirements, obviously, for noticing folks to attend the hearing and whether or not they're going to be supportive. And, of course, that notice has specific requirements to what's contained therein with regard to the proposed rates, which we haven't finished yet. So the first public hearing is likely to be heard in July. The exact date right now is unknown. I've got to work on whether it will be at the July board meeting or whether I can get with the board members to decide if they want to hold a special meeting, if they want to do it at night, or if they want to do it at a different time. So be looking at our CCSD website or at our next board meeting. Hopefully I'll have a better clue as to when that might occur. So that's the next course of action. And if anyone has any questions or comments from this point forward, particularly for those who might be at home, they can certainly email me at RUDOCK, at CambriaCSD.org. They can phone me at the district offices, and or they can contact Alan Labossier, who is our finance manager, and we'll be happy to answer any questions as best possible that we can. This PowerPoint presentation that Ann Bowie made tonight, we will get it. She'll probably transmit it to me tomorrow when she's back home. And we will get it on the district's website as soon as possible, so people who weren't here tonight or if they want to follow along at home when they're watching the meeting, they'll have access to it tomorrow, or they can make the request through the district clerk's office by calling 927-6235. And that's it. If no one else has any more comments, input, thank you very much for attending. We appreciate it.